Last year marked the 20th anniversary of the Congress of South African Trade Unions. Some met to celebrate, others gathered to mourn the fading vision and powers of an extraordinary trade union federation. I attended a gathering of new and old activists in Johannesburg at Kanya College. 2 days spent with grizzled veterans of the union movement of the 70s and 80s was confirmation that the romance of revolution in South Africa is long gone, at least from the established left. The discussion and argument centered on how far COSATU's star has fallen. Crucially, is it worth investing time and energy in trying to regain control of this working-class institution? Or is it now an organization of a relatively privileged and newly conservative labor aristocracy, led by careerists who are happy to collaborate with business in exchange for comfortable directorships a few years down the road? There is much strong feeling, much old bitterness and betrayal, and pockets of petty points to defend. And one of these days, I'll make something coherent of the hours of tape that I recorded. Here, I present a contribution by Jonathan Grossman, given during the session on COSATU and organizational questions. Jonathan Grossman teaches sociology at the University of Cape Town and is involved with several community-based organizations. He spoke about the experience of domestic workers, isolated, female, looked down upon by their employers and their own union leadership. And he spoke about domestic workers and about the need to look at what he called the barricades of everyday life, to see sources of strength and resistance that union organizers and the new social movements may have overlooked.
The story of domestic workers is the same story if we go to the day COSATU was born 20 years ago, to today 20 years later, to 20 years before COSATU was born. In 1985, as COSATU was being born, the Domestic Workers Union, SADU, was also born. It was one of the founding members of COSATU. And it developed a charter of demands. And nobody at that time ever believed that 15 years later, most of those demands would have been won. They centered around a law which protects domestic workers. And that's the size of the change. So much of that was unbelievable 15 years ago. But as we look at the size of the change, we have to look at the size of the continuity. Because now that it's happened, so much of what was happening before is still continuing. So the law is there. It's in place. Can't forget it, because it was achieved through a lot of pain and struggle and blood. It wasn't a gift that came from people who were maneuvering to try to silence people. It was one out of struggle. It was one out of the struggle of domestic workers, out of a broader workers' movement, with massive support and solidarity. It was a collective achievement that was carried over, as some comrades have pointed out, even to domestic workers, to just domestic workers. And we didn't believe that 15 years ago, but neither did we believe that when the law was in place and we looked at what it meant, it would change nothing in the lived reality every day of a domestic worker. Because the law actually says that you now have your right to a loaf and a half of bread a day for you and your family. That's the wage. I worked it out, the arithmetic. It's a loaf and a half of bread a day for you and the members. Each member of your family gets a loaf and a half. Not just you, you all get a loaf and a half. But you must be naked, because there's no money for clothes. And you must stay in one place, because there's no money for transport. And you mustn't have water, because you can't pay to get your free water. And you mustn't have electricity, because you can't pay to get your free electricity. But now you've got your rights. That's the size of the change and the size of the continuity. There's no mystery about the solutions. I'm keen to hear these new forms of organizing and new things that can't have been imagined yet. But I also see some old things. We need to organize. We need to mobilize. We need to campaign. We need solidarity from one to the other. And the place that we should be able to look to for all of those things is the union movement. But domestic workers will tell you that they feel like third-class citizens in the union movement. Not now, with the degeneration of COSATU. From day one, in what some would call the revolutionary period of COSATU, there wasn't that revolutionary period for domestic workers. They don't only feel like third-class citizens in the union movement. They feel like third-class citizens inside their own union, because the very things which make domestic workers vulnerable make it very difficult for them to organize and come together to fight against those things and to take control of their own organization. They are isolated. Each one is facing individually different employer and individually different circumstances.
We're listening to Jonathan Grossman speaking about organizing domestic workers in South Africa.
So there was not that revolutionary period in which workers controlled the domestic workers' union. In the broader union movement, like in the broader society, they weren't taken seriously. They were also just domestic workers. COSATU from the beginning covered up what was known to be the corruption and nepotism inside the domestic workers' union. And why? They were women. They had no strategic strength. They've got no role in promoting competitiveness. They look after children and look after sick people and make food. This makes you internationally more competitive. And they were doing work which in a capitalist patriarchy is mainly done without pay. And in capitalist societies, if you can get something for nothing, it's worth nothing. So they were doing just women's work. And the union movement in its revolutionary period treated them like that. Now, they're very simple steps which are in front of us. We can demand in support of domestic workers a living wage, not a loaf and a half of bread a day. We can demand in support of domestic workers that they should have even the same tenancy rights at the room that they are paying rent for as any other person who's renting a place. But they don't, because the constitution of our New South Africa protects private property. And it's more important if you are the owner of the house that your rights should be protected than if you are the worker who lives in the back room in that house, because that is the right of a worker. And the private property clause protects the right of the employer over the right of the worker. We could have a solidarity fund in the unions. On Sunday last week, the General Secretary of COSATU phoned the General Secretary of the existing now SATSAWU Union, South African Domestic Service and Allied Workers Union, to ask for money for the Zuma campaign. He could have phoned and asked other unions for money for the solidarity campaign with domestic workers. COSATU, when it was time for a training levy, said the employers must be levied 4%. The levy is actually 1%. 3% missing. That 3% could be a solidarity fund to assist in organizing unemployed and unorganized workers. But instead, what is happening is a set of proposals which repeat exactly the same isolation which domestic workers face already. They can't have an organization where they come together like a union. Let's give them an advice office, so that each one can bring her individual case to be dealt with or shut up individually, but don't ever bring them together. Somehow you can't bring domestic workers together. So there's the advice office vision. There's the training vision. Let's teach domestic workers how to cook and sew. Apparently they don't know how to cook and sew. And apparently really the only option in life is for them to learn how to cook and sew. And then let them all start small businesses so they can all have cooking and sewing businesses instead of just cooking and sewing for their madam. And if that were to work, it would work with a tiny, tiny, tiny number of domestic workers who'd have to rise away from their sisters, who would be left in precisely the same reality that has faced domestic workers all this time. So it's the individual solution. And to get that individual solution for yourself, you have to make sure that the rest of the domestic workers don't have it. Because if you all have cooking and sewing businesses, who will come to the cooking and sewing business?
You're listening to Jonathan Grossman, Cape Town activist and professor.
Comrades, I think that we've been caught in a trap of very often thinking of domestic workers as the worker of the rich employer. And of course, that's very often true. But poor people also need domestic work to be done. Disabled people also need domestic work to be done. Sick people also need domestic work to be done. That's not the same as sitting in the madam's mansion and waiting for the telephone to ring about the bridge party. There's that domestic work. But I think it helps us if we start thinking more of domestic work as a social service. Like people need water, we need childcare. We need to think of ways of organizing childcare. These are the kinds of things which, when we think of a better South Africa, a socialist future, we think of as being public services organized in the public sector. The government, when it was setting the wages, echoed faintly by Kasati leadership, who weren't particularly interested, kept arguing, but what about the pensioner? How will the pensioner ever be able to afford a domestic worker at a living wage? Because the pension is too small to pay for a living wage. And what it was inviting workers to do, and that is its invitation to workers, is take your collective poverty and then fight amongst each other about how to redistribute it. Keep it as it is, redistribute it a bit of it here, so you get your pension, then pay a maximum of 400 rand to the domestic worker, because you're a pensioner, so you're poor, but you're poor because of the pension. And the domestic worker is now poor because a poor person can't get social services, except by employing a domestic worker. So we're asked in this new South Africa to look for ways of exchanging, redistributing poverty with each other. I think the answer is a form of nationalization, to make domestic work recognized as a public service, and to organize it in that way, and to envision, to see a society where we can imagine things like that. I don't think it's easier to bash Kasatu on any other question than domestic workers. Jeez, comrades, if somebody is a domestic worker or someone has worked with domestic workers, you don't have a vision of, you know, the solution lies in just approaching Kasatu, and then they're going to listen to you because they haven't heard about you yet, and then they'll take up the issue. No, it's not like that. But you do have a vision that you need to be together. If somebody's ever sat in what are called union meetings of domestic workers, you will see a pattern. Workers come and complain. And by the end of sharing stories of complaint with each other, they are sharing stories of bravado. They're sharing stories of how they defied the madam in the backyard. Because if we want to approach domestic workers, we have to approach them with a respect which is very often lacking in the union movement, and very often lacking in the social movement, and very often lacking in the left. We have to be able to see that that passive, silent, ignorant domestic worker who still is actually at the barricades of struggle every single day, all day long with her employer. She's fighting for survival all day long. She's winning little victories all day long. She's making little acts of defiance all day long. Comrades, I think we're encouraged to look for new layers on which to rebuild and regenerate. And that's great. We all want new layers. There are old layers who've got the strength of survival in those conditions every day long. And unless we find the ways to speak to them and connect with them and respect them, then we're going to end up doing what people just do to domestic workers. We're going to say they're stupid, so we must give them education. I've been to so many meetings of domestic workers where somebody comes along to tell them their rights. But they know their rights. The problem is not knowing about your rights. The problem is getting those rights in a world which tramples on you when you try to get them. They know the rights, many of them. So education is not a solution to a problem of power. Organizing, mobilizing with support and solidarity is a solution to that. Or we're going to say they're silent. So we're going to have projects where we go along and say, let's give domestic workers a voice because they're silent. And anybody who sat and worked with domestic workers or Go in a bloody taxi. Listen to the noise. And then we come and discuss the problem of silence. It's a problem of those who won't hear. The message is very clear. People with power don't want to listen to the message. That's the problem. It's not giving voice, it's building power. All those of us who are particularly active in the new social movements can say, I'm getting 2 minutes. You see, I threatened him and now I'm finishing before time. Those of us who are active in the new social movements are going to say, you know, there's the stillness amongst domestic workers. So we must agitate. We must start to move them. Without spending enough time looking and listening to the fact that they are agitating themselves in the kitchen, alone, in isolation, every single day. That's the only way that it's possible to survive in those circumstances. So I'm asking for us to see the barricades of everyday life, which are sometimes not very visible, or very dramatic, or very noisy, as we discuss with each other. How do we build organization amongst workers which can actually consistently be based on their needs under their control?